Hello, now we shall continue treating the transfer matrices. And the first case is a quadrupole doublet. So we have there two quadrupole magnets after each other, and there's some space between them. Let us assume that the quadrupole is short compared with its focal length, and that's most often the case. In that case, the length of the magnet is much shorter than 1 over kL, which is the focal length. And we can replace the quadrupole magnet with the thin lens with the same focal length, and we will place it in the center of the quadrupole. And like in the edge focusing case, we notice that KL is 1 over F. And now we let L go to zero, and so that KL is 1 over F. And doing that, we can write the transfer matrix for a thin lens. So we have ones here on the diagonal, and only here in this place we have this minus 1 over F. And here, positive focal length means focusing and negative defocusing, as in light optics. So this is our transfer matrix for a thin lens. And we can treat a quadrupole magnet as a thin lens when its own length is much shorter than the focal length. And this is our case. So we are coming from the left, and we have quadrupole 1 here, and then drift length L and quadrupole magnet 2 here, and they have their focal lengths F1 and F2. And we come from the left, so this transfer matrix comes first in the right, so here. Sorry about this mess. It's 1, 0, minus 1 over F1 and 1. And then the drift length 1, L, 0, 1, and then this second quadrupole magnet 1, 0, minus 1 over F2 and 1. And if we multiply these matrices together, and using this notation, that 1 over F1 plus 1 over F2 minus L over F1 F2. If that is, it has also a unit of 1 over meter, so it's 1 over F asterisk, so effective focal length. So total transfer matrix looks like this. And if you take a special case, F1 is minus F2, because the one is focusing and the other is defocusing, so they must have opposite sides. And then 1 over F asterisk becomes L over F squared. And now this is positive, which means that effectively this system here is focusing. Of course, there are some limitations. The focal length cannot be whatever. Depends on this length and the focal length. Okay, and it's exactly like in light optics. So when we have plus lens and minus lens after each other, it's effectively plus lens. And now if we have first a focusing lens, then we usually write this way, so it's FOD, focusing, and then nothing, like zero, and then defocusing. and in the vertical direction, in that case, it's DOF or the other way around. So focusing, defocusing, or defocusing, focusing for the other direction. And sometimes long transfer lines or accelerators, meaning synchrotrons, for example, the two basic structures, photo structure and FOFDOT structure. So focusing, defocusing, and so forth. This distance is bigger usually than this distance here. Well, depending on the case. And here, maybe we can see how these differ optically, this FOFDOT and photo. Now let's recall our transfer matrix. So we had the C prime S prime, the transfer matrix, and YY prime, so the position and direction is transferred from point 0 to point 1 using this transfer matrix. And here we can see that the C is dou Y1, dou Y0. So the partial derivative of position at point 1 with respect to position in point 0. And this is actually the magnification of the system. And S here shows how the position changes with respect to direction in zero, point zero here. And C prime is this how the direction changes with respect to position, and it's related to the focal length. So this is a picture of how focal length is defined. This is the optical axis here, and we have a particle coming here, or light ray if you have light optics, and then parallel to the optical axis, and then its angle is changed, like you can see here, so that no matter where we are, how big this Y is then here, then all the particles will be focused to this point. And now Y prime here is tangent of this angle, which is now Y divided by F, and minus sign here because this is negative angle here. Angle increases when we are going counterclockwise. So Y prime is minus Y over F. So this is minus one over F, this here, like I've written here. And then S prime tells how the how the direction in the end depends on the direction in the beginning. So we can have different kind of constraints for the optical system, like point-to-point focusing. We will come to that later, or point-to-parallel, or parallel-to-point, or parallel-to-parallel. And then it's some constraints on these elements here. But we will come to that later. Okay, another way of writing the solution for Hill's equation. So it's like harmonic oscillator, and then the solution can be written as a sum of cosine and sine function, or cosine function which has a phase factor here. So now it's a quasi-harmonic form because K depends on S, this spring constant, elastic constant. and maybe write it this way, so that we have an amplitude that depends on the position, and it's wise to divide it into two parts. So we have this beta s. We will see how useful this is when we choose some things right, and then this has also physical meaning. And this phi zero is constant, and it depends on the initial conditions. So this is an amplitude function. It has also another meaning, and this is the phase function. And this epsilon here appears to be the emittance. But now, how are this beta, phi, and epsilon, how they are connected to each other? Okay, we will now differentiate this twice and write it into Hill's equation. And we use this kind of notation so that phi minus phi zero, which we had here, we write it as delta phi, just to make things look prettier. And we will then have a derivative of beta, this amplitude function, but this minus 1/2 beta prime, we write that as alpha, and then gamma as 1 plus alpha squared divided by beta. They come here, appear in the solution. So we start from y, which is the square root of epsilon times square root of beta. This is function of s, and cosine delta phi, which is function of s. And we differentiate this with respect to s, remembering which parameters depend on s, so beta and phi. And then rearrange, and then using this alpha is minus 1/2 beta prime. We have here beta 1/2 beta prime. So we have then minus square root of epsilon and this thing here, alpha over square root of epsilon, square root of beta, sorry, times cosine delta phi, and here square root of beta phi prime times sine delta phi. Differentiating this again and rearranging things here, then we have this solution. So y prime looks like this. But since y is a solution of Hill's equation, then y prime is also minus square root of epsilon divided by square root of beta times k beta cosine delta phi from here. Okay. So y prime is this because y is a solution of Hill's equation. And now we see that this is the same as this here. We have here something that is in front of cosine delta phi. We have here cosine delta phi and here sine delta phi, but there's no sine delta phi here. And that means that this factor here in front of sine phi, because cosine and phi are orthogonal, then this must be zero. So sine and cosine are orthogonal, and this must be zero, and this can be rewritten as derivative of beta phi prime. If you write this out, then we get this here, and this must be zero. So derivative of this is zero, which means that this here in parentheses is constant, simply. Beta phi prime is constant. and we can use it, we can choose it freely. But now, and it has an effect on the value of epsilon. No, so now we choose it as one, which means that phi prime is 1 over beta. And now we integrate both sides from 0 to a distance s. So we have d phi ds, this here, ds. So which means that we can change the limits here. So we cancel the ds is out, we have just df. And initially we have phase phi 0 and we go to phi s. So it's this here. And it's the integral of 1 over beta from 0 to s. So the smaller the beta, the faster this phase advances. So beta is sort of the wavelength, related wavelength of the oscillation. So the amplitude function is also, we could say that it's a local wavelength. And then from this y prime here, we know that this here is in front of cosine, that delta phi is the same as this here. Which leads to this kind of differential equation. This could be solved to get beta, but don't, because we have much, much more elegant ways to solve it. But it's possible to use this. So now you can forget this part here, at least in practice. Okay. This is one way of calculating the amplitude function, this beta, using two orthogonal trajectories. So we take two trajectories with the same epsilon and beta zero, but a phase difference of pi over two. So one particle here is this square root of epsilon square root of beta zero times cosine delta phi, and the other is the same here in front, and cosine delta phi minus pi over two, which is sine delta phi. And we can see that square of y 1 0 plus square of y 2 0 is simply epsilon beta zero, because sine squared plus cosine squared is one. And the same thing also at position one. And now we just transform these two particles using the transfer matrix, and then we can solve beta here at this point. So here we have the two particles, y and y prime. So y is here, this here, and then its derivative is here with respect to s. And so we have here cosine delta phi and here sine delta phi. So Now the trick here is that the both factories, they have the same beta. The only thing that is different is the phase, but beta is the same, which means that the phase advance for both of them, the integral of 1 over beta, the phase advance is the same, which means that the phase difference doesn't change. And again, we can use the sine squared plus cosine squared is 1. And then we can solve for beta. So this is shortly written how it goes. So this we know, and we have the, this is the initial coordinates, and then the tangent matrix, we calculate the final position and direction for both particles, and then it just use the amplitudes here, amplitude for particle 1 squared plus amplitude for particle 2 squared is epsilon beta. Beta here is the only unknown and can be solved. And motivation here is to use beta. Is that beta tells almost everything about the system. It tells the single particle trajectory when we know the when we know the phase, and also the beam size, because here this is oscillating between minus 1 and plus 1, so this gives the amplitude, the envelope of the. There are always some particles which have cosine of the angle 1. And then we can get the envelope, the size of the beam, which is square root of, the radius is square root of epsilon times square root of beta. Let's treat this more, this amplitude function and the phase. So here we have again the y and y prime. Here is the square root of epsilon times square root of beta, the amplitude, times cosine delta phi, and its derivative here. Remember, phi is also a function of s. And remember the meaning of alpha, minus 1/2 beta prime. And now each particle has its own starting initial phase. So and then we let just phi zero to go from 0 to 2 pi, then this will draw an ellipse in yy prime plane, which is centered around the origin, which is a reference trajectory. And the area of that ellipse is pi times epsilon. And it's not a function of beta, it's just constant. And let's look at some points here. So here is the epsilon, sorry about the mess here. The maximum, this hat means maximum. Maximum x here is the square root of epsilon times square root of beta. And divergence on the axis here, so if y or x or whatever we name it is 0, then we are on the axis, and we look at the maximum divergence, the angle on axis is this point here, then it's square root of epsilon divided by square root of beta. and from here you can see that this epsilon here is the area divided by pi, because the area of an ellipse is the maximum deviation on one direction times this crossing point distance times pi. This times this is epsilon, and then that times pi is the area. And the maximum divergence, this here, this point here, is then epsilon times 1 plus alpha squared divided by beta, square root of that. So, and this here is gamma, as we defined earlier. That's the reason it was introduced. Okay. And now we can treat this ellipse here. We will soon learn how to treat these alpha, beta, and gamma with transfer matrices, so that we don't need to track. We for example have 1 million particles here in the beam inside this ellipse, and one way of calculating how the distribution is after an optical system, we just track all the million particles through the system and plot them in the phase space, and then enclose that by an ellipse. But we can use just one transformation to get the whole beam, this envelope here. This is a bit more clear picture. So we have an ellipse here, x and x prime. Maximum deviation is square root of epsilon beta. And this distance here to the crossing point is square root of epsilon divided by beta. This maximum here is square root of epsilon times gamma, and the corresponding point here is square root of epsilon divided by gamma. Remember, gamma is 1 plus alpha squared divided by beta. And then we can also get these points here, if you want to plot the ellipse using beta, alphas and gammas. Actually, beta and alpha, we just need to know because gamma is a function of beta and alpha. Okay, now one notification. The emittance for each particle stays constant throughout the whole transfer line when the energy is constant. And which means that in the phase space, the particle which are on this ellipse contour, they will travel here around this ellipse, and they have their corresponding emittances is this area here divided by pi, or just the area. And then particles inside they will go around a smaller ellipse, but they will never come out from here. So particles inside the ellipse in the beginning will remain there from that on to. And the shape of the ellipse varies along the transfer line, but the area remains constant. And only the reference particle has zero emittance, so it travels on the optical axis. Now, about the emittance definition. Usually we have some kind of distribution of the beam. So this is transverse distribution. And I plotted here a Gaussian distribution. Of course, it can the true beam distribution cannot be full Gaussian because it's infinite. There's a certain size of the vacuum tube where the beam goes, so it must be truncated somewhere. And it's not exactly Gaussian, but Gaussian is usually Gaussian fit because Gaussian is mathematically very, very easy. And there are different ways of defining the emittance, usually for ions in accelerators and beam lines, we take like 95% of the distribution. We omit the tails, but we always have to tell what percentage of the distribution we use to define the emittance. So if this is the distribution, then the corresponding emittance is here, which has this maximum deviation. Or it can be an RMS emittance, which is then one sigma. So these numbers here are sigma, standard deviations of this distribution, and 95% is 1.96 or so, or closer to 2 sigma. But if we say just that it's RMS emittance, then we mean one sigma here, which corresponds to something like a bit more than 60%. So that must be remembered. We very seldom enclose all the particles in the beam to the emittance that we treat. And the same also applies for momentum distribution. So defining delta P upon P. So there's also some kind of distribution. Okay. Let's read the ellipse even more. So this is a coordinate representation of the emittance ellipse. And if we so we have gamma y squared plus 2 alpha y prime plus b y prime squared. This product gives the area divided by pi. We don't go through this mathematics and prove this. This is just so. And here again, just to remind you, alpha is minus 1/2 beta prime, so derivative with respect to s, and gamma is just simply 1 plus alpha squared divided by beta. And here we must note that the area of the ellipse is constant only if the beam energy doesn't change. We use this later on. But now let's for a moment look at what, what happens when we accelerate the beam. So acceleration is always into S direction, which means that the momentum to direction S increases. But the transverse momenta, Px and Pz, they don't change because there is no force pointing to X or Z direction, only to to S direction. And now it's important to treat momentum here, not just velocity, because the mass is also changing. So Y prime is momentum to direction Y divided by momentum direction to S. So we have this pi, this Py is constant, and this Ps is M times Vs. So the mass times the velocity to direction S, and mass is gamma times rest mass, and V is relativistic beta times C. And Now, rest mass and C day are constant. So Y prime is constant divided by beta gamma. And this original Py comes from the ion source. So that there is some transverse momentum also for the beam. It's not possible to have zero emittance. So beta gamma y prime is constant. And at acceleration, this y prime decreases as 1 over beta gamma, but y does not. So if we think of an infinitesimal distance, very, very short distance where acceleration takes place, then the position doesn't change, but the angle changes. So the area of the so the area of the ellipses is the size in x direction, size in y direction, times the size in y prime direction, taking care of the ellipse orientation. But practically, y times y prime. So the ellipse flattens in y prime direction, and the area decreases as 1 over beta gamma. So then if we multiply the area of beta gamma, then it stays constant. So beta gamma epsilon, we write it epsilon asterisk. And this we call normalized emittance. So this stays constant. And while beta and gamma increase, then the emittance decreases. For example, from the ion source, the emittance can be something like some hundreds of milliradians. After the cyclotron, it's around 10 milliradians. So in cyclic accelerators, if acceleration is almost adiabatic, and then the periodic solution for beta, we will perhaps treat later, not necessarily needed in this this course, because we are not dealing with the synchrotrons, but this beta is shrinking there. Okay. But let's go on. So now this very, very useful tool. So we already noticed how we can calculate beta function, this amplitude function, using two orthogonal beams in phase space. So having a phase difference of 90 degrees. But now we can also solve it using transfer matrix. So beta and its gradient, sort of alpha, tell how the beam is located in the y prime plane. And we know the transfer matrix to calculate trajectories for single particles. But now we would like to calculate the properties of the whole beam without calculating trajectories for all the particles in the beam. So we try to find a transformation matrix for the vector beta alpha gamma. And there we use the Courant-Schneider. And also now we go backwards here. So we had the original transfer matrix, transforming the beam from 0 to 1, that was called M, and now we inverse the inverse of that matrix, so we can come back from point 1 to point 0. And I just give here the inverse of that matrix. You can calculate it yourself as an exercise. So this is the inverse of CS, C prime, S prime. Okay, this we use. And now we write the Courant-Schneider invariant, which is the area of the ellipse divided by pi in coordinate notation. So we start from 0, point gamma 0 times y 0 squared plus 2 alpha 0 y 0 prime plus beta 0 and y 0 prime squared. And using this here, we can, so y zero is s prime times y one minus s times y prime one, and so forth. And so we replace y zero and y zero prime by the what we have on the right side of this matrix equation. So we have it here and rearrange so that we have everything that contains y squared, everything that contains y prime, and everything that contains y prime squared, like here in this Courant-Schneider invariant. And then everything that is in front of y squared is gamma at point one. Everything in front of y prime is 2 times alpha at point one. And everything in front of y prime squared, this here, is beta at point one. So like here. And we can now write using how y and y prime depend on how this y and y prime at 0 and 1 are related here. Using these notations here, then we can write it in a matrix form. So beta at 1 is c squared times beta 0 minus 2cs times alpha 0 plus s squared times gamma 0, and alpha using this line and gamma using this line. And these C's and S's, C primes and S primes, they are just the matrix elements in the transfer matrix that we use to track single particles. But now we have here a 3x3 transfer matrix, and we can get these these matrix elements for this matrix using the original transfer matrix. There are some rules of thumb to remember. So this upper line here, if you write it as together, so we have c squared minus 2sc plus s squared. It's the same as c minus s in parentheses to the second power. And this is the same for c primes and s primes. And now we have these signs, plus, minus, plus, minus plus minus plus minus plus. And we have the crossing terms here. So we have here C and C prime, S and S prime, and here we have actually C S prime and S C prime. That's the way I remember this easily. Take an example. Drift space. This is a transfer matrix for drift space. And using this notation here, we can calculate beta. Beta 0 minus 2 alpha 0 s plus gamma 0 s squared. And this is for alpha and gamma. Gamma is the same, it's constant. And now if you have an upright ellipse, so alpha is 0, then gamma 0 is 1 over beta. like we have upright ellipse at the point where the beam is narrowest. So the beam ellipse, when it's converging, it goes this way. And then the particles above the optical axis, they go in phase space to the right, and below they go to the left. And when it's upright, then it's narrowest, and the width gives the width of the beam. And there alpha is 0. And then we have alpha 0 here, and gamma is 1 over beta. Then if you have it in this focal point, for example, where alpha is 0, we write beta asterisk being beta 0 here. Then beta on both sides of the focal point behaves like this. So it's the beta in the focal point plus distance squared from the focal point divided by beta in the symmetry point. So the beam radius then goes like this, because it's square root of epsilon times square root of beta. Okay. And the minimum radius is then this. It's always positive. Beta cannot be zero. Because if beta is zero, then the phase advance would be infinite, because phase advance is the integral of 1 over beta. And y prime maximum at the symmetry point where alpha is 0 is this here. And you must remember that the ellipse area is constant, so if the size increases, the width of the beam increases, then the divergence decreases in the focal point when the alpha is 0. Okay, this was all for this time. So we will stop here.